This is Wellness Rising, coming together to prevent and manage diabetes, made possible by a grant from the Medtronic Foundation, committed to improving health outcomes across the globe.
What did you used to think about diabetes before you were diagnosed?
You know, to be truthful, I never thought about it. I never thought about what diabetes was.
Thought it was, I guess, like an older person's disease. And then I became aware that, no, younger people, particularly Native American people, can also come down with it.
How did you feel when you first heard you had diabetes?
I was in a lot of denial. I was angry, frustrated. Why me? I didn't really take care of myself at first.
When I was first diagnosed, it was in the doctor's office as a follow-up to my annual physical, and it was shock because I felt so well. I was asymptomatic.
What do you wish people knew about it now that you've had it?
My best advice to people that are on a borderline, change your lifestyle. That's the most important thing, is to change your lifestyle.
Just get checked and be aware.
First one is that, at least for Native Americans, you know, it's nothing that we did to ourselves.
I just wish they knew that they do need to go to the doctor. They need to take their medication.
Like most of rural Minnesota, the White Earth Band of Ojibwe Reservation is located in a federally designated medical shortage area, meaning there aren't enough health care providers to serve the population. The band is working to fill the gap with programs to help tribal members manage diseases like diabetes. We learned more about this from several women who talked with reporter Melissa Townsend at White Earth's Shooting Star Casino.
Do you have any history of high blood pressure? Okay.
Nope. There is an elder sitting at a long table, and a nurse is taking her blood pressure.
110 over 78. It's good blood pressure. You want me to check your blood sugar today? Okay.
The nurse swabs her finger with an alcohol pad. That sound is a blood glucose meter pricking her finger, and a beep will tell us when the meter has a reading. The two talk about her sugar level for a minute. That's off mic because it's private. Next, the woman steps on a scale and then moves over to do a heart health evaluation, asking about her family's health history.
Okay. Thank you. Right. Thank you.
The nurse doing this screening has shoulder-length dark hair, and she's wearing pink scrubs today.
Hi, I'm Heather Heisler. I work with White Earth Public Health. I'm a registered nurse. We're at the casino today doing our heart healthy events.
She and her team from White Earth Public Health have taken over one of the rooms in the conference center attached to the casino. They've got free coffee and fresh fruit for women being screened. They even have surprise gifts for those coming in. It's a bag of wild rice and a pair of knit gloves. All this is an effort to entice women to get a heart health screening.
Heart disease is the number one killer for women. So we have women come in. They fill out a risk assessment, and the more checks they have, the higher their risk for heart disease. Then we'll be checking their blood sugars, their blood pressures, and then their weights.
Diabetes can create heart problems. When sugar builds up in your blood, it damages the blood vessels and the nerves that help control the heart, and that leads to problems. Dove is waiting in a short line to see Nurse Heather and get her levels checked. Her given name is Harriet Keezer Thompson, but everyone calls her Dove.
Do you have a history of diabetes or heart disease in your family?
Diabetes and high cholesterol.
You do?
Mm-hmm.
Dove was diagnosed with diabetes about 10 years ago when she was 53.
Because my feet start tingling and I got neuropathy, and that's how they found out I was diabetic.
Did it feel serious? Like, oh, wow, this is a big deal?
No. No, I didn't think it was at the time. It is getting to be now.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Why is that?
Because my levels are higher. I'm taking insulin and pills, and it's not helping. It just got completely out of control within the last month, and it's affecting my vision.
What's going on with your vision?
It's blurry because my levels are too high. So that means I have to change my lifestyle. And it's up to me to change it. You know, it's nobody else's but me.
Dove seems determined to get healthier. She says she has started walking at least a mile each day, drinking more water, and making big changes to what she eats.
Instead of two toasts in the morning, I started an omelet, and my snack is walnuts, a half a sandwich for lunch, and then supper. I haven't accomplished that yet. I'm still eating carbs.
Dove says she and her husband eat a lot of meat and potatoes or spaghetti or...
Well, last night I just had tater tot hot dogs, but then I had bread with that. Yeah, it's a lot of carbs, so I have to change that way and learn to eat differently from my husband.
Can I ask you, like, learn having to eat differently, does it make you mad that you have to do it?
No. Yeah, because I have to cook two different meals. Gradually I'll change them over.
Dove is making big changes in her life. But health professionals say she doesn't have to do it alone. Dr. Mary Owen is a family physician.
I think that we emphasize the individuality too much. And yes, you do play some role. Obviously, you shouldn't drink that soda if you can avoid it. But I think that we should rely more on our community so willing to help you through that.
Over the past 15 years, Dr. Owen has worked with many native diabetes patients in tribal clinics. She is Tlingit, originally from Alaska.
The other reason it's important that we don't see it as individually is then we blame ourselves for failure, and that's not good. You know, we all trip once in a while. We just need to get up and get back going. And if we have a group of friends, we can remind each other of that, or a group of supportive people.
Dr. Owen says tribes can play a role by passing policies that help tribal members make healthier choices.
For instance, in my tribe, we got rid of vending machines, sugary vending machines. We were able to do it by resolutions that went through the Alaska Native Sisterhood. So that kind of action as a community can help the individuals.
She also says many tribal health departments have support programs, and that's true here at White Earth. The band is trying to offer holistic health options, and some tribal members are using them.
Hi, I'm Linda Belcourt. I'm from the White Earth Reservation.
Linda Belcourt is a tribal member getting a heart health screening today. She has diabetes.
Well, my dad, he lost both of his legs for to it. My mother had it, and I got two sisters that have it really bad.
Even with this family history, when she was diagnosed, she was stunned.
Just kind of blew me away because I see how my two sisters are. They're both needles twice a day, plus the pills. Yeah, and it really affected them in every way you can imagine. So
that's what motivated Linda to see the White Earth Tribal Dietitian. She offers workshops on how to change your diet and eat more healthy. Since getting on top of her eating, Linda has lost nearly 50 pounds.
Yeah. So I'm still trying, yeah.
The White Earth Band also runs physical fitness centers for tribal members. Trainers can help design workout plans for weight loss. Elizabeth Kent is a tribal member, and she says she tries to make it to the gym.
It depends on if I'm busy. I know a lot of people use the gyms, and they're awesome because you can go there for free. You don't have to pay a membership. You just fill out a paper.
She developed gestational diabetes when she was pregnant with her daughter 21 years ago. Ever since, she says she has been pre-diabetic. Her fasting blood sugar is 120. Her motivation for staying healthy is her fear of needles.
I really, really don't like needles. So that's my motivator, other than death or, you know, losing a limb. I don't like the idea of that either, so...
It sounds like Elizabeth has a good support system. She's got a walking buddy, a friend of hers just challenged her to quit smoking, and she and her coworkers at the casino are doing the 30-day challenge, giving up all sorts of yummy but unhealthy sugary foods. Back in line with Dove, I ask her if there are any resources the tribe might offer that could help her.
Like a personal chef, maybe?
Wouldn't that be nice? No, you know, I go online a lot and research a lot, so that's kind of where I'm going. Like, my levels were high yesterday, so it's a drink a lot of water, and I drank, like, 40 ounces before I went home. That took it down to 175.
It's finally Dove's turn to be screened and get her sugars checked. By now, we're both wondering if the last few days of her hard work are going to pay off.
Can I record you getting this done?
I suppose.
Okay.
It's probably going to be high, but that's what it is.
She gets her blood pressure taken and then her weight. And now it's time for her blood sugar check.
One 60.
That's not too bad.
No.
It's getting lower.
Yep, good.
But otherwise, like, fasting was 296 and...
Oh, boy.
So, yep, I'm working on it.
Awesome, good job.
Yep.
The Minnesota Health Department estimates that about 14,000 native people in the state are pre-diabetic, and most of them don't know it. This is a problem because, as we've heard, diet and exercise matter a lot in preventing the onset of diabetes. A lot of healthcare providers think diabetes is on the rise because the American diet is getting worse. As Leah Lem reports, the Indigenous Food Network is trying to change that.
The Indigenous Food Network is a growing movement around revitalizing knowledge and access to traditional Indigenous foods. I've been to several Indigenous Food Network meetings. A typical meeting starts with words of thanks and a healthy meal. This particular week, the group enjoyed wild rice taco bowls with greens. Joy Persall is the executive co-director of Dream of Wild Health, which is the leading organization of the Indigenous Food Network.
The Indigenous Food Network is about bringing community together, both nonprofits, schools, Native organizations, to ensure that everyone in our Native community has access to healthy and Indigenous foods.
The Indigenous Food Network is working hard to address a lack of access to healthy and Indigenous foods across Native communities. The focal point at the moment is the Phillips neighborhood, where earlier in the program, we met our friends from Little Earth.
As we started doing this work and looking at what were the needs in the community, you know, there's a need for education. When we talk about food access, you need access to information about what are the foods that are healthy for you or what are your Indigenous foods that will keep your body healthy or make it healthier.
Embracing Indigenous foods can help in diabetes prevention and maintenance, and traditional preparation of those foods can help create healthy alternatives for diabetics.
When you start talking to people about corn, they are often unaware of the different types and kinds of corn there are, and often they just think of sweet corn. Sweet corn for diabetics, maybe not so good, but you can have ground corn make and hominy, popcorn, lots of other products that can be made.
The Indigenous Food Network is bringing traditional health full circle. Last May, I attended an event, We Eat Well Together, which showcased workshops about sacred medicines, salad making, and seed saving. The community room in the Minnesota Chippewa Tribe building on Franklin Ave was packed full of participants and was lush with plants for sale.
To decolonize our diet is to understand our history, is to understand the impact that food has had on us, the choices that we haven't been able to make, but most importantly, the choices we can make now, and how we can lead forward in claiming the foods that are best for us and that will sustain us, and that we can together create an environment where we can feed each other, and then we're not dependent on the outside, but we care for each other, as we always have.
Through these actions, the Indigenous Food Network strives to decolonize diet and turn it into a thriving diet, helping to strengthen the Native community's connection to traditional health and cultural practices. I'm Leah Lem.
Now it's time to talk about fry bread. How do we deal with a delicious food that we love, but maybe bad for us? Cole Primo reports.
I'm here at the popular urban Native coffee shop, Powwow Grounds. It's located in the Little Earth community in Minneapolis. It's Friday, and it's busy. It's Fried Bread Fridays, after all. Natives and other locals alike are grabbing warm, fresh fried bread with various toppings like cheese, lettuce, tomatoes, from a worker behind the counter. It's a happy environment here. It smells great, and it's comforting. But fried bread may be a negative factor in Native health, and that's what makes it a controversial subject, and one that's tough to cover. Lucky me, right? I mean, just 8 years ago, a popular fitness trainer, Jillian Michaels, caused a bit of a stir when she visited a reservation down in Arizona. It was for the TV show Losing It with Jillian. She was there to help a family struggling from obesity and diabetes. When she arrived, the community welcomed her warmly and threw an outside feast for her. But she began looking around, and soon the drama unfolded, and it involved, you guessed it, fried bread.
Looking around, everybody's obese. 90%. Meantime, we're out there dishing out fry bread. I'm watching the little ones. No, on the fry bread. It's killing them.
You want a tortilla, don't you?
Then she did the unthinkable.
What would happen if the fry bread left the building?
There'd be an uproar.
Let's see. I'm done with it, Coraline.
She threw away the fried bread in front of all those people who welcomed her. Well, let's just say it didn't go over well.
Are you serious?
I saved some.
Yes, it's a reality show, so things are supposed to get dramatic and over the top. But the issue being presented here is clear. This food is important to the Native community, but it could also be a factor in diabetes, and it's worth discussing. So how did fried bread come to be? The history is painful and one of survival. It all began over 150 years ago when Navajos were forced to walk 300 miles onto reservations in what is now known as New Mexico. And that new land did not support their hunter-gatherer way of life. To help a bit with history, we spoke with Dr. Arnie Vigneault.
Somebody's going to get mad at me, and but fry bread is not our traditional food.
Dr. Vigneault is a Mille Lacs band member who lives and works on the Fond du Lac Reservation and treats people with diabetes. He's also a historian.
They couldn't go and follow, you know, certain things because they didn't have the land space to do it. So then they started getting commodities and, you know, white flour and refined sugar and all these fats and other things. And they made the best thing they could out of it. And that turned out to be our soul food and our comfort foods.
Vigneault says not only does fried bread bring comfort to those living in a stressful world, it brings back cherished memories. He talks about his brother who died of diabetes and how comfort food would bring them together.
And I would go and sit with my brother and have those foods, and I'd be 6 years old again and safe. You know, and that's what we go back to. And it's not good.
But like most comfort food, fried bread is not healthy. On average, there are about 700 calories and 25 grams of fat in a large plate of fried bread, according to the U.S. Department of Agriculture. That's not even including the additional toppings added to it. So it could very well contribute to diabetes. Maybe it's not a major cause, but it's a factor worth exploring. And some, like Chef Austin Barthold, say it's time for a change back to more traditional, more healthy foods. Barthold is the cafe manager and chef at Gatherings Cafe, just a couple blocks from Powell Grounds. He has strong feelings towards fry bread.
Growing up, all I saw was fry bread, fry bread, fry bread, fry bread.
He says he knows how to make it, but refuses to. It's because of the health issues he sees Native people dealing with on a daily basis, and his family history.
My grandma passed away from it. My uncle had his legs amputated, both of them. So I grew up with diabetes.
He says fried bread has gotten even less healthy than it used to be.
And back then, it used to be cooked in cast iron. Now, nowadays, it's just like you just get a big old fryer and you just dump everything in there.
He says fried bread used to look a lot more like a pita, thinner. But now, cooks are using even more oil, more baking powder or yeast.
A lot of people make it like 9 inches wide, you know.
Barthold pushes against the trend towards modern unhealthy food by cooking up healthy and balanced meals made from traditional food sources of Native people.
One of the biggest things that I try to do is bring back the fruits and vegetables. I mean, the gathering, the hunting, you know, all that stuff is being lost these days.
So what does a traditional Ojibwe meal look like? According to Barthold,
we always had a venison, the walleye, and wild rice dish.
Venison, walleye, wild rice dish. It's far removed from the fatty components of fried bread. Oh, and the purpose of this piece, to be clear, is not to throw fried bread under the bus, but it's nice to be aware of how fatty foods can lead to health problems. With anything, moderation is key. Bob Rice, who runs Power Grounds as well as Fried Bread Fridays, likens it to a food at the Minnesota State Fair.
You know, you go to the State Fair, you're going to get greasy stuff.
He says fried bread is not to blame for Native issues with health and diabetes.
Our community has quite a bit of diabetes, and that's not because Native Americans eat fried bread. It's because of many other factors. You know, whatever the American diet is, obviously doesn't work well with our systems.
But he does realize the impact food like this can have on people.
If your diet consists only of fry bread, probably not a good thing.
Yeah.
But, you know, everything in moderation.
Even Barthold believes it's possible to have fried bread in a healthy way. The key, he says, is portion control and moderation.
Smaller. Back in the day, you know, I was asked to make fry bread and a bunch of sandwiches. So what I did is I only made small ones and just put some venison in there, some buffalo, but made it smaller so you're not eating this huge thing that's mounded with all this stuff.
On one hand, fried bread is a symbol of sorts, a food forged out of necessity by struggling yet resilient Native people. On the other hand, it's a comfort food that could also be harming the Native people. I'm Cole Primo.
Our last story takes us back to Circle of Life Academy on the White Earth Reservation. You may hear students in the background. We spoke with Mike Bunker in his office at the school. Lori Stern reports.
Mike Bunker has three jobs. He's a licensed deputy for the Mahnomen County Sheriff's Office. He's a paramedic who manages the ambulance service for the Mahnomen Health Center. And he's dean of students at Circle of Life Academy, where he used to be health and science teacher.
We have a real high population of students with family members that have diabetes. And we would talk about eating healthy, avoiding sweets and carbohydrates, and how to exercise.
He calls the students nieces and nephews, but they're not his only family dealing with diabetes. His dad had it, his mother does, and so do his two older brothers.
I'm pre-diabetic. That's I try to keep my diet down with the, like I don't drink sugar pop, I don't eat candy, just because, like I said, of the family history.
And as a paramedic, Mike has seen what happens when people give up on their health.
We have little tools in the ambulance, a glucometer. You poke the finger and you can check the blood. It's like ours will check blood levels up to 800. And anything over 800, it'll say high. And it's like the average blood sugar should be between about 95 and 110.
Mike says the hospital where he brings people has found some patients with blood sugar over 2,000. He remembers one call from a man who said his wife was very sick but did not want to go to the hospital.
And she was in bed and she was wearing like knee-high wool socks. This is in July. I lifted up the blankets to check her feet. And as I started like to try to peel the sock off, her skin was coming with it.
Mike decided she had to be seen. But the hospital in Mahnomen sent her to Fargo. Her gangrene was so bad, doctors amputated both her legs. But her internal organs had already been damaged, and she died 2 weeks later. I ask Mike how it is diabetes can be so sneaky.
It happens so slowly and gradually. People with asthma, they can't breathe, so they have to use their inhaler. People with having chest pains for a heart attack, it's a pain. Diabetes is sort of like a silent killer.
Mike says some people get used to living with a little pain or a little numbness, and may not notice when it gets worse. They don't realize the damage being done.
And after years, they just decide it's just sort of normal living with pain.
At Circle of Life Academy, Mike and all the staff try to set the students on a path of healthy eating and exercise. I'm Lori Stern.
We learned a lot putting this program together. We learned that our people are strong and resilient. We work and heal in community. We do best when we draw upon wisdom from traditional ways. This has been Wellness Rising, coming together to prevent and manage diabetes. I am Roy Taylor. Wellness Rising, coming together to prevent and manage diabetes, is made possible by a grant from the Medtronic Foundation, committed to improving health outcomes across the globe. Wellness Rising is produced by Ampers, diverse radio for Minnesota's communities, online at takecontrolmn.org.